From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Ben Folds 5 made their own way in the 90s. Indie pop, smart rock, piano, not guitar. They made fans. They touched minds. They broke up. Now they're back. This hour On Point with their first album in 13 years, Ben Folds 5. You can join the conversation. Have you been waiting 13 years? What's the Ben Folds draw? We're at 1-800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK, and you can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from New York are Ben Folds and Robert Sledge from Ben Folds 5. They are reuniting with Darren Jesse, yes, three, not five, for their first studio album in 13 years. It is The Sound of the Life of the Mind, out next week. Tomorrow they go on national tour and beyond. Ben Folds is the singer, songwriter, producer, piano man, frontman for Ben Folds 5, done plenty of solo work the last decade or so. Albums like Way to Normal and Rock in the Suburbs. He's worked with musicians like Regina Spektor, Amanda Palmer, and many more. Was a judge on NBC's The Sing-Off. Ben Folds, thanks for joining us. Welcome back with your five or three.
Good to be here. And there's Robert Sledge.
Hi,
absolutely. Also,
well.
Yes, absolutely. Robert Sledge, bassist, multi-instrumentalist for Ben Folds 5, fellow North Carolina man. He's been out with International Orange and Bob Sledge Band. Robert Sledge, welcome. Wonderful to have you.
Hey, thanks so much.
So, what took you guys so long?
Oh, we've been here.
Been hanging out.
Yeah, together, apart. I mean, the 13 years, that's quite a gap. Did you think you were ever going to get back? Did you think it was all done, or I don't know?
I think we did for a long time. It was 2008. It occurred to us that we might want to do this. We played a show for MySpace. MySpace were doing really cool, like, live broadcasts, and they were asking bands to play albums front to back, which was what it was called, front to back.
Right.
And they asked me if
that
I
is
would...
the whole thing.
It's the whole thing. You play the album from the first note to the last note. Actually, Robert used to do that in doing cover bands where once a year they do, like, Prince's Purple Rain. What else did you guys do?
That was what we did. Well, that caught on, so we just kind of ended up doing Purple Rain all.
It was Purple Rain every time?
Yeah, but I mean, it seemed to, it was a fun thing to do an entire album, and a bunch of other stuff kind of sprang out from that.
So MySpace tapped you, or you went to them? How did that happen that they got?
Well, MySpace asked me which of the albums I would like to do, and I think that they were, and I was, leaning towards the Unauthorized Biography of Reinhold Messner, but that was a band record and not a solo record in the middle of my solo career. And I was just in that kind of mood, so I just asked Robert and Darren if they'd be into it. I think it surprised the MySpace guy that I would be so kind of, cavalier about it and just give him a buzz. And they said, yeah, sure. So we did it. And the show was really good, and it had a lot it just seemed like we didn't miss a beat. So we talked about getting together a little later. That was 2008, and it took 4 years for us to finally get together and make the record.
Hey,
time flies.
What's the rush? I love that, the cut we used there in the open, Michael Prater, 5 years later. That kind of, Beachy Boys sounding harmony at the top, and then you come in with your, it was the opposite of Fire and Rain. You guys first got together, I think, in Chapel Hill in North Carolina. You got some Carlboro, North Carolina in your background. That's James Taylor country. Fire and Rain, is that a James Taylor reference, Ben?
It is.
I always thought I'd see you again, I think is the line he's referring to. Mm-hmm. And I always thought I'd see you again. And then,
Because I never thought I'd see this guy again.
Yeah, I never thought I'd see this guy again. And there he is over and over again. He's the guy that you get stuck with. In your life, once every 4 or 5 years, it's like there he is at the burrito stand, there he is in the airport, and you learn to, I think you learn to embrace that after a while. You know, maybe it's annoying for a bit.
Yeah.
Towards the end of the song, if you're listening carefully, he may not be around anymore, And so at that point, you know, I guess I kind of missed the guy. I don't know.
We all know that kind of person in our life that you just happen to come across 4 years, yep. 5 years later. Let's get a little more of the sound of this new album in our ears, The Sound of the Life of the Mind. Here's Erase Me, Ben Folds 5, with their first track and first single from the album. It is Erase Me.
Erase me so you don't have to face me. Put me in the ground and mow the daisies. Ah, the memory. See how it goes with you. Erase me. Erase me.
There you go. Sort of loud, brash biting. And this one is not about who you see every 4 or 5 years. It's about the breakup. All right, be done with me. Whose emotion was that, Ben, Robert?
That was, I think I was, I don't know if I really identify with that song that I wrote. I just, I've just seen people do that a lot of times. You know, it's okay. You know, so go, okay, you can just completely scratch me from your memory, pretend like it never happened. But in this case, you find that the other person took their advice. And the singer's not happy to have been erased, as it turns out.
Put me in the ground and mow the daisies.
Yeah.
Ben Folds and Robert Sledge are with us from Ben Folds 5. Good callers for you. Charlotte, North Carolina, Joel is calling. Hi, Joel. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hey, I moved to the Carolinas right when Ben Folds put out his first album, and I had come from the North, and I noticed in a lot of the songwriting on the first album especially, and all the way through the third album, he addressed a lot of issues he was having with his southern background and his redneck past, so to speak, and how he was overcoming that. And I just drew many parallels being a Yankee coming to the South, seeing that in front of me, the type of differences. And I've just been a Ben Folds 5 fan since that day, basically, that I heard that first album. I followed them ever since. And I just, Ben, I think you're the greatest, Mr. Sledge. You're fantastic. And I hope you guys come to Charlotte again very soon.
Yankee Joel, you got a little southern twanging right in there.
I know, I heard that too.
Yes.
Yeah, way to pick it up, buddy.
Yeah, you're fully on board now. What about it? Yeah. The region. I mean, you are both North Carolina guys. And what about overcoming or digging in? Have you gone separate ways on that?
Well, I don't know. I think that it's interesting. Joel brought up this sort of collision between North and South that's happened, that people are kind of having to reconcile as borders get, you know, more porous, I guess.
Yeah.
And that's
culture.
Interesting. You don't really hear that much in songs that aren't just completely xenophobic. You know, it's nice to hear. I like Ben's perspective on it.
Ben, how about it? Did you? I mean, you went from North Carolina to there's some New York time, some Nashville time.
Yeah.
Are you trying to overcome something about Southernness or just work through living? We all do.
Well, I mean, there was a reference to he referred to your redneck past. And having lived in Australia for a few years as well, it holds up there too. The redneck part is not necessarily the South. It's more of people come from something they're not always completely proud of, and there's a certain kind of person that will try to cover their tracks or cover their story or become a new person and forget about it. Like my grandmother had actually done that. She grew up very, very poor. A lot about her background she was ashamed of, and so she sort of became a new person. And as far as the South goes, it's an interesting place, but it's so big. Even the South is like different states are like different countries. Mm-hmm. And, we in North Carolina viewed South Carolina quite differently. And now that I've been in Nashville a lot, it's a lot different than North Carolina. I'm really happy to be from North Carolina because I think there's a real intellectual center there in the Triangle area with the universities and the influx of North and, people from the North and the South together. I don't know. It's interesting stuff, but I couldn't write a book on it.
But what about those travels? I mean, in the many years outside the South, was it a musical journey? Was it a cultural journey? A geographic? What were you looking for, Ben?
I used to work. I was a rental representative at Hertz Trucks when I was in high school, and I would go in early, and they had a really badass map, and I would put little dots and marks on places that I wanted to go to all over the world. I was fascinated with the idea that I might be able to. I didn't leave the state of North Carolina until I was 17 years old. I never left the state. And I just always wanted to travel.
And is there a homecoming angle to this album, to be back with Robert and back with Darren?
You know, our sort of the band's hometown where we mm-hmm. where we formed together was Chapel Hill, mm-hmm. and Chapel Hill's a very artistic place, and it's also a place with a lot of hang-ups. And I'm not so dead sure I ever felt that the town, as a collective unconscious, was mm-hmm. all that proud of what we did. To tell you the truth, I mean, like I remember when Dave Matthews broke about the same time and. A little bit before, and we went up to see his concert in Charlottesville. Yeah. The mayor came out and announced him, and they made it Dave Matthews Day, and I thought, wow, this would never happen in Chapel Hill.
Time for Ben Folds, Robert Sledge, Darren Jesse Day in Chapel Hill. North Carolina, take note. Listen, I'm really glad to have the two of you with us. Here's Hold That Thought from the new album, The Sound of the Life of the Mind. We are with Ben Folds and Robert Sledge this hour of Ben Folds 5. They're back after a long time away, headed out on national tour. You can join us. Are you a Ben Folds 5 fan? What draws you in? What do you listen for? What's the Ben Folds trademark, the attitude, the sound? We're at 800-423-8255. Stand by, guys. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Hold that thought, and I'll hold that thought. You hold that thought.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Ben Folds and Robert Sledge of Ben Folds 5 about the return of Ben Folds 5, all three of them, the alt-pop trio that's back together and back on the road after 13 years apart. Behind us right now, Brick from 1997 and their Whatever and Ever Amen album, the song that broke them up and out into big public awareness. You can join us this hour. Were you there for Brick, for Army? Was Ben Folds right? Was this your punk rock for sissies? Was it something else? What do you hear in their new tracks? We're at 800-423-8255. 800-423-TALK, their new album. That is The Sound of the Life of the Mind, comes out next week, and they are headed out on national tour across the country and then around the world. Ben Folds and Robert Sledge join us from New York. A lot of people know this song. Pete in Woburn, Massachusetts. I think, Pete, you know it. You're on the air with Ben Folds. Pete, thanks for calling.
Hi there, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, it's a pleasure to talk to you. It's appropriate that song's playing in the background because I'm not a musician myself, but I've always been fascinated by this idea of the relationship between a musician and their hit, or hits, if they're fortunate. And that, I don't know that there's ever been as compelling an example of that to me than Brick. And I'd be so interested to hear the guys talk about what it was like, particularly early on, to be known for a song, celebrated essentially for a song that was so wrenching and kind of brutal to listen to. Great to have a hit, but boy, that was a tough one. Guys, I'd love to hear you talk about that.
Thanks, Pete. Oh, Ben, how about it?
Yeah.
He's a very young couple, and they're going out to... There's going to be an abortion done here. It's tough.
Well, first of all, thanks for your like insightful, empathetic view on it. It is true. So, whatever your hit is, I think, or at least a first hit or an only hit is certainly. I mean, it was for us. See, that song was really different from the other songs that we've been playing. We had an album out that, as you referenced, we were calling Punk Rock for Sissies. Mm. We were playing. Really, punk rock clubs with a baby grand piano, and we were a loud band, and we played really fast, and it was funny songs. I thought they were funny. Mm-hmm. And we made the second album, And this song kind of came out of nowhere, and it seemed very different from everything else. And I think the band really became, I don't know, I just think we sort of grew up in that 4 minutes as a band. And it was so late in the game that I didn't have a chance to retract it. I started to really get scared about putting that out as it's, you know, it's...
You mean before it ever saw the light of the day, you were worried it was too melancholy, too dark? What?
I was a little worried about the subject matter. I was a little worried about how personal it was. And I was a little worried about how different it was from the other songs on the record. But there wasn't any time to discuss it. We were mm-hmm. mixing the thing like the next week and, you know, it was kind of done. Robert played upright bass on the song. And that was completely different. We were known for his fuzz bass sound, and suddenly we have a hit mm-hmm. with a song that is really nothing. There was no trademark in mm-hmm. common with the band.
Right. Well, I mean, I think also just in terms of the sort of genre of song within the band, Darren and I are big fans of Ben's ballads. Like, that's his sort of sensitive side that mm-hmm. that was really appealing. It really balances the... really balances out the more bombastic, loud stuff, and this is just, I think, a rather heavy extension, sort of like balancing the scales between all the loudness.
What did it mean for you guys when that song came out and it got so much mainstream airplay? It really put you in the public eye in a way like you had not been before for all your fans. I don't know. What did that change in your lives, your music, Ben?
I'm not sure I could really feel the extent of the radio play on the song, which was a lot. I was in Australia for a little bit of that, and I remember coming back, and Robert and I went up to Pepper's Pizza in Chapel Hill, and when we came out, there were like four or five kids waiting for us that kind of followed us down the street, and Robert said, "No, that's becoming normal around here." I was like, "Really? I didn't know about that." I mean, I kind of disconnected myself for the probably the 2 months that the song was getting the most airplay.
We've got Mark here listening. Says, the first time I saw you guys, you opened up for Southern Culture on the Skids at the Cat's Cradle. I think that's Carlborough. That's getting back near Chapel Hill there, right? Do you remember?
And what a great band and what a great favor. Not a lot of sort of cool indie bands had extended a hand. I mean, they were all friendly, but it was amazing to me that Southern Culture on the Skids, who was a really popular band, who had a lot going on, just said, "Oh, sure, why not this piano band?" You know, instead of doing a favor to the 1,000 other bands that they were friends with, you know. And I just thought, of course, it was very smart on their part.
Yes. Good decision.
But really
genius.
Friendly.
Pure genius.
Well, they're brilliant musicians.
Yes, totally. Mary.
Yeah, good for them. Let's get a call from Charleston, South Carolina. Trey is calling. Hi, Trey. You're on the air with Ben and Robert Sledge.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey.
I just wanted to say, I'd never really thought of it. You guys have been using the term punk rock for sissies, but I kind of simultaneously was in middle school around the time you guys were getting big, was getting into punk rock, was getting into you guys, and I'm really super excited. I know you guys are coming to Charleston soon. I've already got my tickets. I can't wait to come and see you.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
There's a hooray. We got one more from Charleston here. Shiv. Shiv, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I played in an indie band back in the late 90s, and we were on an indie label and, you know, put out a couple records. And I was just curious about distribution, because at that point, you know, you kind of had to be on an indie label or a major label to really get any distribution. And I was wondering, nowadays, we got a chance to play at a festival last year, so it kind of got, you know, our juices flowing a little bit, too. And I was wondering how distribution has changed now with them, because they've experienced both sides, too.
You know, it's interesting. When we started out, we signed to Caroline Records, was the first label mm-hmm. we signed to. It was fantastic at the time because I walked in the door and it looked like a really big college radio station. A lot of my friends were trying to get distributed through them or Dutch East India or Dutch East Indie or whatever. And they, but now, you know, the offices are spare and everything seems really... like just a few mom and pops, and it's just all completely downloads.
Yes, it's the internet for the most part. I think the internet is the way people hear it. You have to compel people to actually own your record in some way rather than just to reference it on YouTube. I mean, there's a lot of bands, I have to admit, that I'm like, I want someone to hear the band. You're sitting out somewhere, you get out your phone and you go to YouTube and you play it for them. And it is the music business has been in depression for most of the time that the band has been defunct. We were a band when the money was rolling in the 90s. There were budgets. People were hustling and it was exciting. Now it's exciting, but it's exciting in a kind of a scary way. And if you have music, you've got to put it out through the internet in some way free and hope that you can scare up the money to immortalize it, hopefully on vinyl.
Yeah. I mean, also, I think that, and I use some friends of mine in a band called Birds and Arrows as an example. They have a really great little cottage industry where they do what they like to do. They love to create crafty things and create art, and they have, a little silk screen, and she makes handbags, and she does a lot of things, just in terms of like little products for the band.
A little silk screen, she makes handbags. It sounds like lyrics for the Ben Folds Five.
Right? No, right. I know. And she's beautiful, and she married an artist.
Right.
I want to ask
you guys if you think that this new, I mean, the industry as it was fell apart, has fallen apart. Now there's a new way. Do you think it's changing the sound of the music that gets made today? And I'll bring it to you, Ben. I mean, does that encourage more indie? Because you might as well be, and you've got to find a niche. Just a very few go up big and are all over the place, but so many who are not. Does it change the music we're getting itself, Ben?
Well, I think it does. It does some good things. One good thing that it does is that there's not the idea for an up-and-coming musician that you're going to be a millionaire. People talk about how digital music, delivery of music has changed things, how downloading and how the atrophy of the brick and mortar side of the business has changed music. I don't think you change music. I think people make music, and what it encourages is people to make music and distribute it regardless of the profit. And I think when they do that, you find that the people who are doing that are really in love with what they do and tend to take more risks, that because you have a smaller budget, you have to come up with creative ways to make something work. And it's spilled into the mainstream because you hear songs like – good example is the – a couple years ago, the Foster the People hit a Pumped Up Kicks, where that – they probably had a budget. But the sound of it has been influenced now by the way that we all sort of have to work.
Right. Let's
hear a little. I think it's a really good thing. I think there's more exciting music out now. The problem is there's no filter.
Yeah.
I think it was something to be said for the days where like a Blue Note Records, you knew you were going to get a great record. You don't know where you're going to get it from now.
It takes an awful lot of listening to work through all that material. I mean, the filter is our own ears, right?
Yeah, there's certainly people who are loyal followers of certain record labels.
Yeah.
And their work is made easy for them by labels like, Merge Records or what was the label you were just – labels. Nonesuch Records.
Yeah, there are labels, yeah.
Maybe we are a little bit of a filter – right here. Let's hear a little bit more from the new album, The Sound of the Life of the Mind. Lyrics here by Nick Hornby. We'll ask about that. Ben Folds and Robert Sledge of Ben Folds Five are with us. Here's title track, The Sound of the Life of the Mind.
Hey, Pet's brother wants to beat up Paul. The boys have gone to watch. Some of the girls are down in the mall. Justine's got cherry cola and scotch.
Justine's got cherry cola and scotch there. Lyrics by Nick Hornby, The Sound of the Life of the Mind. Ben Folds and Robert Sledge are with us. Brittany's calling from Nashville, old stomping grounds for Ben. Hi, Brittany, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
So excited to be on air, and I'm a first-time caller, so this is exciting. But you guys have some great guys in the studio. I just would like to say that my husband and I, Lucky Ben, we actually kind of fell in love over your music. We've been together for 4 years now, and initially he already loved you, but he kind of introduced me to it. At first, I was a little leery. I have a musical background, and so it was a different sound for me, and I basically just fell in love with it, and we're crazy about you, so we'll see you eventually in concert. But we definitely like our Ben Folds.
Oh, great. Great, thanks.
Hey, they fall in love over your music. You can't argue with that. Ben, how did Nick Hornby get into your circle to bring some lyrics to this one?
Well, this is Robert. I'm going to answer that question because sure. Ben had to go to the bathroom.
Okay. It's so human.
Well, you know, the funny thing about Nick and Ben is Nick wrote a book called Music. I can't remember exactly when it was written. I think maybe 99 or 2000. And he was just talking about music and songs he loved and music he loved and what he thought was relevant. And he was quoting lyrics from artists, and he quoted a song from Ben. And I think I called Ben and told Ben about it, or maybe Ben had heard about it as well. And I think shortly after Nick had written that book, Music, Ben and Nick got in touch with each other. What do you think about that, Ben?
I think that's exactly what happened.
No doubt. You worked with a lot of people in your years when you were out on your own. Among them, William Shatner. What was that all about, Ben?
I was always fascinated with his voice since I'd been a kid, because I had his album Transformed Man, and there was nothing ironic about my love for that album when I was a kid. You know, I was maybe
Captain 10. Of the Enterprise. What's not to love when he sings?
Well, he wasn't singing; he was speaking, and there are people speaking all over the place. Yeah. Why are we compelled to listen to his voice,
Mr. Tambourine Man? Mr. Tambourine Man,
you listen.
Play a song
to
for me.
You produced that, Ben. What was it like working with him? And we've talked to him here, and he's some special piece of work.
Yeah, he's an interesting cat, man. He's a good dear friend of mine. I've now, you know, known him for well over a decade, and he's a total pro. He's very interesting. He you know, what we had I think that was special about that album is you have a very famous actor who has a very interesting voice that people listen to for whatever reason. He speaks and you listen. I mean, you'll change the channels around and hear a lot of people talking, but why do you always want to hear Shatner speak? And he hadn't really told his life story. He hadn't spoken from his point of view. He'd been Captain Kirk, and he's been T.J. Hooker and all kinds of other Priceline dudes, but he hasn't been himself. And I asked him if he was interested in telling his story in that way. Actually, what happened was a record label had come to him and asked him to do a bunch of covers as a joke. Mm-hmm. And he called me and said, Benny, would you be interested in making an album of Madonna covers?
With William Shatner? Or
this is Bill saying this. Yeah, and yeah. I was like, well, I don't know, man. I think if you have an opportunity to do that, I wouldn't make it a joke this time. I would go out there and tell your story. He was so interested in that. He wrote 50 pieces on his life, like, within about 2 weeks, and he sent them to me. And I culled from that really quickly enough to make a record. And I started pairing him with people like Henry Rollins, Joe Jackson, mm-hmm. Amy Mann, and everyone was so thrilled to do it. And we told his story. And that I would say, and a lot of people haven't heard that record, I would say it's one of the best records that I've had anything to do with, and that it also is a unique record because it is a unique opportunity for a 75-year-old actor to tell his story truthfully, and it's also a record that's never been made otherwise.
Yes.
So I stand up for that record.
Truth.
I think that's a great record.
I think
the truth and like 30 chords.
Yeah,
dude.
Truth and 30 chords. maybe no small dose of irony as well, whether it's intended or not, when William Shatner gets going. Ben Folds and Robert Sledge are with us. Ben Folds 5. They are back with their first studio album after 13 years, and you can join us. 800-423-8255. 800-423-8255. Talk. What draws you in to Ben Folds? Ben Folds 5. You can join us there in New York. The new album is The Sound of the Life of the Mind. Here's Do It Anyway. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Do it anyway. Do it anyway. Do it anyway. Cause you do it. pawn shop billboard. We buy gold, old dreams just fade and twist. It's a heartache that never ended.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Ben Folds and Robert Sledge of Ben Folds 5 about the return of Ben Folds 5, all three of them. After 13 years apart, they're out with their new studio album, Sound of the Life of the Mind. Sky High behind us right there. Lyrics on that one actually written by drummer Darren Jensen on this particular track. They join us from New York today. They're heading out across the country, around the world on tour. After a long time, each on their own paths, you can join us. What do you hear in the new tracks of Ben Folds 5? Did you watch Ben Folds on the sing-off on NBC? Did you wish he was your mentor there with his wise words for contestants? What do you need now from Ben Folds 5? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. Ben, Robert, lots of callers for you. Rachel in Boston. Thanks for calling, Rachel. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was just actually really excited to call in today and maybe say hi to Ben Folds and the other members of Ben Folds 5. You guys broke up when I was 10 years old, but my girlfriends and I came across an album of yours when we were in middle school, and it kind of developed my love of music.
Oh, that's nice. What do you think it is about these guys, Rachel? What was it about their sound?
I just have no idea. I can't explain it. It was a different sound than I had ever heard in music. I'd never even listened to the lyrics of other musicians before, but when I listened to the songs on their albums, they just sound cheesy, but they spoke to me.
Rachel, I love it. I appreciate your call. Ben, Robert, what is over the years with the music that you've done together, and Ben and Robert, some of yours apart, I mean, what do you think it is that draws people? What kind of listener comes to you? And what about the comparisons that get made? You know, Joe Jackson and Todd Rundgren and even Billy Joel, Elton John, all that stuff. Does it resonate for you, Ben? Do you draw the people who might have gone to them in a different age?
I almost think of the relationship between fans of music, the music, and the musician as being something that's a lot less. It's very difficult to define. Mm-hmm. I think that it's like we're all from the same planet or something. And if you are being yourself, other people who have that in common with you, often you don't have anything else in common in life. I mean, Rachel sounds like maybe we would have something in common. But sometimes you speak to people and you're like, wow, this person is – I can't imagine what they're getting out of my music. But you have sort of you have some sort of link. I think the problem – comes with some artists is that they're not always themselves, and when you're not yourself, then it's really hard to connect.
But who comes to you guys instead of, let's say, just being snagged by mainstream pop? You know, look at the top 10 right now, whatever it is, it's a different sound from what we hear from you. What's the fork in the road, have you come to think, over years? And happy birthday, by the way, Ben. Many people are reminding us here on air to wish you happy birthday.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations. Well, many happy returns. What's the fork in the road that sends traffic your way?
Well, I will say this, that I remember I was hanging out with somebody in Phoenix, Arizona one time, and it was in like 1996. And she went on the internet, and she was like, studying the internet and looking, and she's like, wow, you know, the Grateful Dead is the biggest band on the internet. And this is 1996.
Okay.
But you guys are the second biggest band on the internet. And I was like, whoa, what does it say about our audience? You know, kind of, I guess, maybe tech savvy, kind of a little bit geeky, kind of, you know, and, you know, you think about all the other groups that were happening at the time. There was a lot of fashion and music. There was grunge and stuff that was pretty macho. Or really stylish, really dancey, and it's like, where do these other people fit in? You know, the people who are sort of running things now, of course, and I think we had a pretty literate, pretty tech savvy group of, dare I say, nerdy people who really really embraced our music. You know,
hey, and why
smart
not?
People.
Why?
And
smart
I think it's
people.
Also. Yeah. It's also someone who's willing to let their mind be part of an emotional experience is a certain kind of music. I remember seeing it like a, some kind of blues club was playing one time, and on the wall I had this picture of this old blues musician who said, "Music is made with the heart, not the mind." And my friend turned to me and said, "That's not true. It's made with the heart and the mind."
Let's hear a little bit of it. Listeners can decide for themselves. Stumbling Home, Winter Blues. The band came back together in the studio, what, for the first time in 2011 with some original tracks like this one for Ben Folds' retrospective album, The Best Imitation of Myself.
Sometimes I know. Sometimes I know I am right. Lately I'm thinking these streets are taking me stumbling home, winter blues.
Stumbling home, winter blues. Pete in Essex Junction, Vermont. Pete, thanks for calling. You're on with Ben and Robert Sledge.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Long-time listener, first-time caller, and Ben Folds is the reason I called in.
Great.
I just want to say that, you know, I was like probably 13 or 14 when I first started listening to Ben, and I was listening to punk rock mostly, Green Day, Operation Ivy, Rancid, bands like that.
Yep.
And I remember hearing the song Philosophy, because my brother had this self-titled album, and it was the first time I'd heard, you know, piano music like that, and it was also the first time I'd heard a guy singing falsetto, and I thought it was badass. there's definitely, I mean, I remember with, like, you know, being a 13-year-old wanting that song on repeat with the volume as loud as possible just for hours and hours and hours.
Wow.
And I think the honesty has a lot to do with why people like his music, your music, Ben, because it always feels like you're speaking from the heart and you're being honest and you're just writing the songs that you write.
Hey,
how do you write so many good songs? Because your whole entire catalog is really, really, really excellent. Like every song on all your solo albums and all your albums. I want to know if it's like a conscious effort. Do you sit down and set aside time for songwriting, or do they just come to you naturally, or what's the process there?
Ben,
let me answer that for you. This is Robert Sledge.
Yeah, yeah, Robert.
Usually when I show up and roll my eyes that he hasn't written a song, that's when he's like, oh, I've got to go
oh,
write a song.
Yeah, you're the spur.
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
About it,
well,
Ben.
Well, that's true, a little bit. I have to have a lot of pressure, external pressure. I create my own external pressure to finish songs. And when the band started out and I felt like I needed to write more songs so we'd have songs for gigs... And yeah. Then we had our second album. It's like, oh, man, I've got to write some more songs for the second album. It's not that I'm not compelled to write songs naturally, but I think that most people have to overcome a bit of fear in order to write something and put it out there. And so I've always had to put a lot of pressure on myself to do it. I put a great deal of pressure on myself to make it something that really means something to me, that has a reason to be out there when you've got – more songs than could ever be counted coming out every week anymore. And I really appreciate it that someone can hear the honesty in it, because I use a lot of metaphors and I write from a lot of character points of views. And there's a certain kind of person that doesn't hear the person inside it. So I really appreciate that. I also really dig that he just used the word badass with an ED at the end of it. Yes. You ask what kind of person listens to our music.
There you go.
It's someone who doesn't. The people that say that's badass.
Grammatical profanity.
ED. It's not. Yeah. Asked is the way to do it.
That's so NPR.
Yes, it is.
And Ben Folds 5. I want to ask you, because you've got birthday greetings coming in, and we've got lots of listeners calling in who have listened to you for a long time now, both of you, all you guys. And then I'm looking, and you're turning 46, no mean number, and I'm looking here at Pop Matters, and they're describing you as, Ben, as the venerable singer-songwriter. This is Ben Folds, who's been around a long time. You're not the only one. Everybody who's listening to you in, you know, 94 and 5 and 7, they're putting on some years here, too.
Of course.
How does that factor in to your art?
Well, you tell it like it is from your perspective. And it's difficult in the business of rock and roll. It's a business that's created for those with disposable income, between the ages of 18 and 25, really. Mm-hmm. That is the ideal age to be perceived as, to relate to an audience of that age so that you can sell your record. I think it's the kiss of death. What's the kiss of death?
You mean that
to try to relate, to try to be 25 years old when you're 46. I am 46 years old, and I write songs from that perspective. I do a lot of talking about when I was younger because that pits against who I am now, and it says something about change. But I don't write from anyone else's point of view, really, but someone who is my age. I remember hearing John Lennon. Actually reading it, I think it was a Rolling Stone interview, and he said, you know, I'm 42 or whatever, or 40, and I'm writing songs about this, and if someone who's 40 can relate, then that's who I'm writing to. And I think what you find is kids then relate to it because they're interested, like, what's around the corner? As long as people feel like it's honest and you're writing from who you are, then it's awesome. And I'm really so glad to be 40, 46, now I'm happy to be in that age because it's a hard trip to get there, and I'm not sure I want to have to do it again.
You know, I wonder while we're on that, because you've got this song, one of my favorite songs from the new album, Robert and Ben, is this On Being Frank, and you talk about Frank Sinatra in this song.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's some perspective, it's written as I guess in the voice of Frank Sinatra, sort of thinking about his life and his career coming up from
his
Jersey.
Tour manager.
Yeah, it's his tour manager thinking about.
Oh, okay. I didn't quite get that. But he's looking back over time.
Mm-hmm.
Where'd this song come from?
My tour manager quit. He came back. He's quit a couple times. One of the times he quit, he came in. He's a brilliant dude. And he's almost like part of the to me, he's almost like part of the band, and he keeps things really interesting. But he's 60-some years old. He started off by tour managing Emerson, Lake, and Palmer.
Wow.
In the early 70s. Yeah, and so he came to me and said, man, I can't do it anymore. You know why? It's like, I don't know who I am. I don't know who I am anymore. So I've been setting the thermostats for artists. I don't know what temperature I like it at. I've been having their leftover food. I don't know what I would order. I don't know what I would do if I ever went home because I never go home. I don't know who I am. And this really played into the themes I was writing about on the record is the loss of identity. So I thought, you know, what happens when Frank Sinatra died and his tour manager of 30 years was left with no identity, and how would he feel? And then I thought about my parents, who were married for a long, long time, mm-hmm. and divorced, like, did one of them wonder if they like coffee or not, or what they would like in it, or what time they would like to wake up
alone?
Like, you have to learn who you are, and not who you are globally, but who you are at that moment.
Okay,
and that's what this album's about.
Wow, I already like this song. It has really blossomed for me with that explanation. Listeners, here it is from The Sound of the Life of the Mind, On Being Frank. Okay, On Being Frank. For 30 years, I set the thermostat where Frank Sinatra liked it. Now he's gone. Susan in Nashville, you're on with Robert Sledge and Ben Folds. Thanks, Susan.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Ben and Robert. How are y'all?
Very good.
Hey, Susan.
Just wanted to say my husband and I are both 48, and our daughter is 11, and we're all huge fans. Can't wait to see you guys at the Ryman.
Yeah.
And I never will forget the first time I heard anything, it was Ben Folds. I don't think I can say the title of the cover on the air.
Was Dr. Dre?
Exactly. And I was like, what in the world? And then I listened to it, and I'm like, that's brilliant to take that type of a take on that song. And that got me into Ben Folds 5, and my daughter especially loves... One Solemn Dwarf.
Yeah, absolutely. From 48 to 11, that's a pretty great range. Susan, I love that. Let me get one more if I can. Matt in Nashville. Matt, our time is short, but you've got a good story. Let's hear it.
All right. Hi, Tom, and hi, Ben, and hi, Robert. Great to talk to you guys. I just wanted to tell you, I came across your music a little bit after the band had broken up. I was a music major. I was studying music business. This back in about 2003. And, man, I had about had it. I was about to throw in the towel and stop being a music major so that I could just concentrate on making music fun for myself. But a friend of mine, he said, what, 54th on DVD.
Wow, it's breaking in. I'm so sorry we can't get it, Matt. You're just breaking up. But I know.
I know what he's saying. He saw the sessions at 54th show that we did, which was a music show where you played – like without any commercial interruption for 45 minutes the way they would do an old BBC show. And I'm really happy he saw that one because I felt more proud of that performance than any other TV performance that we did, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. That was a really fun and intense day that I remember very, very well.
But what you may not know from the notes we got from Matt here is that on the basis of that day listening to you guys, he decided to stick with music and has done
awesome.
It. He was ready to bail. You guys, you brought him back in.
That feels amazing. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Save one. Ben Folds 5 saves one. Hey, the TV show's all done, Ben? You're done critiquing a cappella groups?
Well, the show, yeah. I mean, the show's not going to come back on NBC as far as I know. And that may be it. Yeah, I enjoyed doing it. I felt like I was helping helping those groups out some.
Well, a lot of people really responded to that, too, and the sort of intelligence and empathy and insight that you brought right there. Robert Sledge and Ben Folds of the Ben Folds 5. Just great to have you with us. These guys, you're headed out on national tour, and then what, Australia and beyond as well?
That's right. We're going to Australia and the UK, back to America on the West Coast, and then
Indonesia. We're going to go to Indonesia next year.
Yeah,
all right,
Rocket
Kapala Kalapa. I hope you have a great time all the way around.
I have to study my Indonesian.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us today, to you both. Thanks a lot.
Right on. Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks.
The new album is The Sound of the Life of the Mind. Here's Away When You Were Here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.
You saved my ear from the